So good morning. My name is Borja Mirza-Luis, and I'm going to talk about some of the results we had on quantum reference frames with my work with my supervisors, Gilad Gur and Larry Sanders. So first, some background. Whenever we have sort of restrictions, extra restrictions on the quantum operations that can be performed, this gives rise to resource theories, resources. You can think of, for instance, in optics, it's easy to produce Gaussian states. So if you only restrict yourself to Gaussian operations, any other non-Gaussian state would be expensive to build and becomes a resource. Or the most famous one we work with is LOCC, where restrictions, where the resource would be entanglement. And what I'm going to be talking about is when parties lack a shared reference frame. That imposes also restrictions. What they all have in common is essentially the resource states are the states that can no longer be prepared under these restrictions, but then they can be used if you have them to lift the restrictions. So you can think of, for instance, if you have belt states, you can use them to teleport your qubit, and then you can do anything you want with them. So in a sense, having belt states lifts LOCC for you. So let's go to lack of shared reference frames. Think of the scenario. You have a big quantum network in the future, maybe part of it is in a satellite rotating the Earth. So think of Alice is in a satellite, Bob on Earth. They might not always have their reference frames aligned to each other. So if Alice sends Bob the qubit in a quantum state, this qubit in Bob's frame would not be the same, has been transformed by a member of the symmetry group of the reference frame, right? For instance, by an angle. And Bob has to do the reverse transformation to recover the qubit. Now, if Bob doesn't know the alignment of Alice, which member of the group to use, what he'll have would be just an average over all possible alignments, like this. And if he has no knowledge, so the average is over a uniform measure of all possible different alignments. And this is called a G-twirling operation. So essentially, it is as if there is a channel, a noisy channel, which produces this kind of noise under your qubit. That's a very symmetric kind of noise. And it imposes restrictions. It imposes sort of a super selection type. Essentially, what it means is it forbids coherence between certain subsets of your Hilbert space. So your Hilbert space will have a direct sum structure, right? Matrices will be block diagonal. And the states that Bob will end up having, this G-twirl states, will be invariant under the action of the group, any action of the group. If you just put an action on both sides of that, since the group is closed, it will just be averaging possibly with a different order, but it would be the same result. So these are the states that Bob will have are states that are essentially can be built in any reference frame. Doesn't really matter what the reference frame alignment is, and therefore they don't encode any information about the reference frame either. Now, any other state that is not of this invariant form will need a reference frame to be prepared, and it also encodes information about the alignment of that reference frame. And in that sense, it's a resource. So you can think of, for instance, Alice sending two of these resource states to Bob. Of course, Bob will get them twirled, but now they're twirled together. They're not twirled separately. So this information about the reference frame sort of remains in the correlations between the parties, so between the states that Bob gets, even after twirling. So you can think of Bob can perform a smart measurement, get access to some information about Alice's alignment of her reference frame, then any qubit that Alice sends to Bob, Bob can use that information, do the reverse transformation, and recover the qubit, for instance. That's one way it could work. Or you can also do it this way. So Bob doesn't really need to make a measurement, realize what the alignment is, and then perform the reverse transformation. You can sort of make it more automatic. So you can think of Alice is sending the qubits that she wants to send, but any qubit that she wants sending to Bob, she also accompanies one of these resources as well. So this could be an arbitrary qubit. Alice might not even know what these message qubits are, but the resource is known. Alice knows what the resource is. Bob also knows what this resource is in Alice's frame. So Alice sends both of them to Bob, and then Bob can in general perform a transformation on both of them and ideally retrieve Alice's qubit in his own frame, or partially do so. So if you look at this, this sort of is somewhat similar to, for instance, teleportation. So you have, and that's the sense in which this can be seen as resources, right? You send them in a noisy channel with your qubit, and then Bob does something here and recovers the qubit that you're sending, right? So in that sense, they also, you can think of them as a substitute for the reference frame. So Bob doesn't have Alice's frame, so Alice is sending a quantum state that is a substitute, sort of a token of that reference frame to Bob. So these kind of resources have some certain, what they know as frameness in them that can be quantified. Okay? Besides the states, also what this G-twirling does also kind of applies to the operations that Alice performs. So any operation that is performed in Bob's reference frame has to be twirled again in the same way, and it imposes the same set of restrictions. So operations that, of any operation in Bob's frame will be, again, for the same reason, invariant under the actions of the group, would be blocked diagonal in form, will not have coherence between the subsets. So that's the restriction, essentially, that I was talking about at the beginning. That's the type of restriction you'll have on the operations you can perform. And then you can ask, so this is what I'm saying. You only can work with invariant operations, invariant under the actions of the group. And then you can ask the question of how do these resources transform under this restricted set of operations. And what you need, or another way of putting it is, what kind of a function would be a good measure to measure this, the quantify this resource? And what you would need is that you shouldn't be able to, once you have this restriction in place, you shouldn't be able to create these resources for free. Or if you have them, you shouldn't be able to make them more. So the frameless, the measure should not increase the amount of resource. You want a measure that does not increase under this operations, restricted set of operations, right? So if you have a, at least under deterministic operations of this restricted form, you want your measure to be non-increasing, monotonically non-increasing. Okay? One way to find some such measures is to look at the asymptotic rates of conversions between the resources. So you take n copies of psi, transform it to m copies of phi. Asymptotically, what it means is that in the limit, you want psi to be something close to phi. This gives you a rate. And if you can also, if it happens that the rate, also the same rate works the other way around, in the limit, then you'll have a unique rate that interconverts the two states together. And you can use that this rate as a frameness measure, as a measure of frameness. All you need to do, essentially, is just choose a state by convention and assign this function 1 to it. Then for any other state, you'll have a measure of your frameness, right? So these standard units, we call them ref bits, similar to e bits in entanglement. And then that gives an operational meaning to this frameless measure. It essentially determines the cost that is associated with preparing a resource in terms of this, how many ref bits. So once you have a resource, it's equivalent to how many of these standard ref bits. That's what F denotes. Okay? So now you can also, you probably, in many cases, you need to also think of mixed states, resources in mixed states. One way this could come up is if the channel itself is also other sorts of noise, which is tantamount to Alice sending resources in mixed states, an ensemble of different resources with different probabilities to Bob. Straightforward measure of frameness for this kind of mixed states, it would be the average cost of preparing the states. So the average frameness that you need for preparing this mixed state. But then, of course, you can decompose the mixed state in various forms. They don't all have the same average. So you want the minimum average, right? The least amount of cost that you have to pay to form that mixed state. Now, taking this minimum in general is very difficult. This is known as the frameless of formation. And finding explicit results for cases is usually very difficult because of this minimization process. You have to minimize over all possible decompositions. So that's hard. One way to go about with this is as follows. So for many cases that have been studied for different reference frames, you can always bring the states into some standard form with real amplitudes. That is particularly useful. For instance, where qubit can be brought in this form with real amplitudes. This is somewhat like the Schmidt basis for multipartite states in entanglement, right? It's a good representation of the state if you want to study entanglement. The same thing works here for frameness. And for the case of qubit, it means that the qubit is essentially only identified by one real number, and therefore the frameness of the qubit is also ultimately a function of this one number. And then you can encode this this information in a product form of this form, where this is complex conjugation in this basis, and then you apply x. This we call concurrence of frameness. This value is very easy to calculate for a qubit. Now, why do you want to do this? For two reasons. First of all, if it turns out that under certain conditions, this inner product itself can be a measure of frameness by itself. And what is more, if you take the average of this of concurrence, minimum average of this concurrence, as the concurrence of formation, this can be calculated directly for qubits. There's a direct formula that can give you this minimum by itself, and then actually this is how it works. So if you have a state rho, this minimum average concurrence can be determined by the eigenvalues of a state that can be formed from rho. Now, in this way. Now, If the concurrence itself is a frameness measure, then you can relate this minimum average concurrence to the minimum average formation frameness, and this is that important corollary for that. So for this to be a measure of frameness, you need the following. So for any pure states, if your cost can be expressed as a non-decreasing and convex function of the concurrence of this inner product, then the average, if you just put the average concurrence in the same function, will give you the minimum average frameness. So you can then calculate directly the frameness of formation, then minimize it over all possible decompositions. There's a bit of mathematics involved, but the main idea is it has to be non-increasing. Yeah, non-decreasing, yeah. So it has to be increasing or constant, because you want the minimum of the frameness to go with the minimum of your concurrence. And it has to be convex, because ultimately you want to relate the average frameness of different concurrences in terms of the frameness of the average. So you want the relation to hold. This is something very similar exists in entanglement by a paper of Wouters. There, the concurrence is defined a bit differently to work for bipartite entangled states, but it's interesting the same idea works for other resources besides entanglement. Okay, so now let's see some explicit examples of this at work. One example would be the group Z2, which is sort of associated with parity. So if you encode your logical qubits in states with even an odd parity, like states with odd angular momentum. Doesn't matter what the angular momentum is, doesn't matter if it gets rotated as it goes from Alice to Bob, as long as it has odd angular momentum, we call it, for instance, 0. If it has even angular momentum, we call it logical 1. Then essentially it means that you're working with a reference frame for parity, which transforms under Z2, has only two elements. Every qubit, no matter how big your Hilbert space is, every pure state is essentially a qubit, can be brought to this form. The 0 by itself, or the 1, the eigenstates of parity operator, are non-resources. They are free. Any linear combination of them becomes a resource. Turns out that this has been calculated already, that the frameless costs can be determined this way in the standard form. We already know what the concurrence looks like. You write it in terms of the concurrence. It is an convex increasing function, so the method works, and we can directly calculate the cost of forming a mixed state for this kind of reference frames. Another example would be U1. So this is a phase reference frame, for instance, a clock. If you're preparing your laser, relative to which you prepare the phases. Or if you can think of Alice and Bob, if they shared, if their z axes are aligned, but their x and y axes might have an angle with each other, that would also correspond to a U1 phase reference. The unitary representations that are used in the twirling operation are of this form. N is a number operator, if you think of it as a laser, for instance, for a laser, N would be the number of photons, the operator. Every state can be brought into this fixed form, standard form with real amplitudes. The Ns are the eigenstates of the number operator. Then they themselves are not resources. They are free. Linear combinations are resources. All gapless states can be transformed to each other asymptotically and revert with a unique rate both ways. By gapless, it means their spectrum of these amplitudes don't have gaps. So you don't have a zero between two non-zero amplitudes. For this set of states, you can transform them together asymptotically. So you have a frameless measure. It happens to be the variance. That's the reason is because these kind of states, when you take multiple copies, they all tend to a Gaussian. And you can shift it around. And the only the relevant feature would be the variance. And this has been normalized so that a plus state would be your refit units of frameness. Again, if you do the same thing related to the concurrence, and again, it turns out to be a convex increasing function, so you can also find the frameness of formation, the average of the cost you need for forming a mixed state in this kind of reference frames directly. So let's go to a more complicated kind of reference frame, SU2. That's where they don't share a spatial reference frame at all. There's much more structure here. It's a non-abelian group. Unitary representation of this form, J, is the total angular momentum operator in a given direction n. So if the states are aligned along different directions of n, it turns out they cannot be transformed to each other at all, even asymptotically. So you have different classes for states, somewhat like tripartite entanglement, where you have classes where there's no interconversion possible. The results for explicit results for SU2 have been focused on a smaller subset, a simpler subset of this form. So you fixed your direction n hat, and then you only consider states that are whose angular momentum is completely aligned with the direction that you've chosen. So for maximum n, the reason you choose this is because you want ultimately to get multiple copies go to the asymptotic limit. And this set is closed under tensor product form. So if you take multiple copies, it still remains in the set. It's a simple kind of set. Every state here can be transformed again in this form with real amplitudes. But now there's a difference. Even the eigenstates of J by themselves are resources, except for J equals 0. So if you exclude the singlet state, any other eigenstate of angular momentum is itself a resource, encodes some part of information about the direction. So what happens is that here you cannot really shift things around for free, and that means that in terms of interconversion rates, there are complexities. So first of all, gapless states, gapless by the same sense, their spectrum of amplitudes don't have gaps. They can be transformed to each other asymptotically, but not with the same rate. So if you go one direction and go the other direction, they don't have the same rate. So you cannot define a fixed frameless measure except for specific kind of states. But since we are dealing with frameless of formation, you can still determine the cost of forming them from ref bits. So if you choose your units to be the plus states again, the cost of forming a pure state from them is the maximum of these two parameters. This is the variance as before, but now you also need to take the mean into consideration. That comes because even the eigenstate themselves are resources, and therefore you cannot shift them around for free. So the mean is also relevant. And because you have these two parameters, that's why the rates one way and the other are not the same. And then, depending on what the mean is, you will have different, you have to consider different cases. So, for a qubit state, I can write it in this form. This is essentially a qubit state between k and k plus 1, but I just factored the k out. The mean is depending on k, the variance does not. So if k is bigger than 1, the mean will always maximize, will be always the maximum greater than the variance. So the cost for k bigger than 1 or bigger, is determined by the mean. But for k equals 0, for states of this form, it is possible that sometimes the variance would be the bigger value, so the cost will be determined by variance. So you have to separate the classes. But even so, both these classes, you'll see, they're depending on what the amplitude, this amplitude is, you'll need to, there are two different ways, you need to separate the functions. And there you have a problem, because this is not an increasing function of C. So this is the cost, it's not an increasing function of C, so you have a problem, and this method does not work for more in the general case for SU2 complicated. And more complicated kind of groups of this form. So for summary, lack of reference frame induces restrictions, gives rise to resource theories. You can define a frameness as a cost for preparing that state. You can relate it to another measure called concurrence, whose minimum average can be easily calculated. And then under this condition, you can use this minimum average to find the frameness of formation of the qubit itself. That's it. Thank you.